Hey, didn't see you there. Welcome in to the Texas Rangers podcast, aka the Charge of the Mound podcast, the most unofficial podcast imaginable by Texas Rangers fans for Texas Rangers fans. This is episode number one. We have just been birthed out of our womb, and we are ready to grace you, Texas Rangers fans, with the latest news and rumblings from some fellow Texas Rangers fans. I'm your host, Jeff. Let's go around and meet my partner in crime, Brett. Brett, today's episode, we're going streaking through the quad and into the gymnasium, something I believe you've actually been arrested for before, if that's correct, right?
The charges were dropped, so you can't stick anything on me now. And it's interesting that you say that we're birthed, because we are at least twice as annoying as the cry of a newborn baby.
That's true. I thought you were going to segue that into, like, because right now, if the playoffs started, we have a wild card birth, but not quite as clever as my analogy, but fair enough. That was a decent one. Guys, thanks for checking us out. We basically started this podcast because there's not many, if any, Texas Rangers fan podcasts out there, so we appreciate you listening to us. Format of the show, I'm sure, is going to change week to week as we kind of learn what the hell we're actually doing, but this week, since the Rangers are, as we aforementioned, streaking, we figured we would just do a Rangers recap as our first segment, go through the last three series the team has played, and how much ass they've been kicking. Brett, we'll start things off. Right now, this series feels like it was 17 months ago, back when you and I were juniors in high school, basically. But about 9 days ago, the Rangers swept the A's, winning games 5-2, 6-5, and 6-4. Bullpen actually got the win in all three games. Let's just break this down game by game. So the first game of the series was on a Friday night. It was popping. It was lit at Rangers Ballpark, mm-hmm. as we can all remember. It was a 5-2 win, and that was the Joey Gallo three-run walk-off home run off Santiago Casilla. And I don't know about you, but as bad as this team has been playing lately, during that game, I just wasn't worried. I kind of had a feeling like, as bad as we're playing, the A's are going to screw this up even worse than us. And once they got into that crappy bullpen, the bats just lit up. What were your thoughts on that first win and kind of the more exciting one with a Gallo bomb to walk it off?
Yeah, so it's interesting that you had the feeling that, hey, we got this the whole time. My feeling is that, hey, it's in the bullpen, so we're going to screw this up magically somehow. Somehow it turned out to be the opposite, which is awesome. Good to see, but I did not have that hope at all.
It was interesting. Keone Kella came in to get that win. This is a guy who, this year, his ERA has not really matched his performance. I feel like every time I look up, his ERA is in the high fours or low fives. After he got the win on Friday, he had a 4.5 ERA. I think the long ball has plagued him a lot. Maybe just because he's a guy, when he's out on the mound, looks like he's going to punch the batter in the face every time and then throws like a 97-mile-an-hour fastball on the black. Even though he got the win, I know the bullpen's been really shaky, and yeah, we can probably blame a lot of it on Sam Dyson, like the witch hunt can end there, but how have you felt about Kella so far this year, particularly here in a game where he actually got the win, but he's still not one of those guys that I get that good of a feeling when he enters a game, especially a close game in the latter innings.
See, I've always liked Kella, and his stats don't necessarily always match it, but he's still really young. And maybe it's just his attitude, and that kind of goes back and forth, obviously being sent down at the start of the year for an attitude problem. But I just really like it. Like, he's always fierce, he's always just, like, there, and he's a force on the mound. And so maybe he's not as reliable. I don't know his age off the top of my head, but he's super young, so I think he's a lot of room to grow and develop. I just love seeing him out there.
I think he has that closer's mentality where, like, he can get roughed up one day and come back the next day still with, like, a machete on the mound, willing to fight anyone. And I know it was a really bad look, like you mentioned, him getting sent down after kind of freaking out in a B game in spring training. I thought that was hilarious, personally.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like, a game no one cares about, he's only against minor leaguers, and he still has, I mean, I think you need a little bit of an attitude and a swagger to be a closer. So, like you're saying, he's a guy that's young, has a lot of room to grow, and I think part of it is just obviously the maturity aspect. But I don't want to change him too much, you know?
No, absolutely not. I think he's good where he is. I think it's easier sometimes to pull a guy back than it is to get a guy going to where you want him to be.
That's a great point. Yeah, it's tougher the guy that you have to feel like you have to light a fire on him every single time out. All right, second game, which was on Saturday, Rangers won again, 6-5, Nick Martinez with a quality start. We scored 4 in the 7th to come from behind. This game was one of those kind of ho-hum games, which I feel like, no offense to Nick Martinez, but every time he starts, I'm like, oh, Nick pitched pretty well for us today. This is a guy who's proven to be just sort of the consummate pro for the Rangers. We yank him up and down between AAA like 79 times a year. He's a long man in the bullpen. He's a fifth starter. He's a sixth starter. He came through today, and as we're going to mention in a couple of these other series, had another good start for us. What are your thoughts on Nick Martinez so far this year, filling in for, obviously, Hamels has been down, Tyson Ross has been down, and then earlier in the year, before Cashner was available. The dude doesn't have the best stuff in the world, but he's a very reliable guy and certainly a valuable Texas Ranger, I feel like.
Yeah, absolutely. And just like you were saying, I feel like we put him in a tough spot, and it's just kind of the nature of the business where you're sending him up and down and moving him all around. And I would imagine it's really tough on a pitcher, especially a starter who likes to get into a routine for every day, knowing I'm going to pitch today or I'm not going to pitch today, and just kind of getting that routine of a location to that far, not Frisco, sorry. Still, just all the moves and everything, and he's still kind of certain. I think he gives a good product. Maybe we can get some more consistency, and I think he's filled in pretty well thus far.
His relationship with the Rangers is like that guy you see in high school who has that girl who he keeps breaking up with because he knows he can just get back together with her anytime she wants. And she's like a cool chick, you know? She's not like the hottest girl at the school, but
no.
She's nice. She's fun to hang out with. And yeah, he yanks her around.
Either.
Exactly. He yanks her around a little bit, but men are pigs. I mean, that's if there's anything this podcast can teach you, it's that.
Oh, absolutely. That's our main theme that we want to get out there, I think.
Yeah, we have this guise that this is a baseball podcast, but really this is dating advice 101.
Yes.
One other interesting note about that game, Matt Bush got his third save. This is a guy who's just been awesome since being converted to the closer's role, and I don't think it's any coincidence that once Sam Dyson stopped pouring gasoline on the fire of games in the late innings and Bush has been in the role, we found some consistency and maybe able to hit a win streak. How much better do you feel about Matt Bush closing games than about Sam Dyson putting up the L cage and just throwing batting practice at the end of them?
Dyson, see, I'm still holding on to the hope from the World Baseball Classic because he was so good in the WBC. And he got me really excited at the end of the season, and then it's just been a pile of shit for most of the season today. But I'm still clinging on to the hope that maybe he'll come in and just, like, whatever that's, I don't know if it was swagger or what, maybe he'll get it back. But I've been pretty impressed. I think if we keep going with him, and maybe Dyson will learn to get it together. I don't know.
The thing that's tough with Bush is, because he's only been a Ranger for 1 year, you think, like, oh, man, this guy's got a definitely bright future as a closer. He's 31 years old.
Yeah.
Which is kind of crazy. And I know when the sky was falling earlier in the year and we were like, sell everyone, the season's over, it's doomed, sports are stupid. He was actually a guy, because he still has 4 years of control after this, that we were like, dude, if we need to sell pieces, this is a very attractive one that we have as a trade chip. But he's ours now, so hands off other teams. Don't even think about it. All right, we then go to the Sunday game. This was an A.J. Griffin start, and Brett, kind of a recurring theme that we're going to talk about. Even though the Rangers ended up winning this game, A.J. Griffin got roughed up again. So it was a 6-4 win on Sunday. The Rangers came from behind, that's what she said, in the seventh. But Griffin struggled again in his first start after that complete game shutout at the Padres, who are kind of barely a major league team as is. Five innings, four earned runs, three walks, and gave up three home runs, which has been happening way too often. Are you worried at all about A.J. Griffin? I mean, we're going to get to the Detroit start later, if you can even kind of call it that. I mean, he threw a complete game shutout, which is a rarity in this day and age. He's a guy that's had arm problems before. I mean, what are your thoughts on him, especially after the last two starts?
Yeah, I don't know what to think of him. I started to get really excited about him again after he had that complete game, and then it's just been a complete course reversal after that, so... I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what to think of him and where to go in the future with him.
He's one of those guys like Colby Lewis. He has like an 87 to 89 mile an hour fastball, so very little margin for error. And he has that looping curveball that I feel like third time through the order, it's like that curveball in Wii baseball where you're like, this doesn't fool me anymore. So
yeah,
you just go have a little batting practice on it. He's again like Nick Martinez, a valuable guy. His durability has kind of been in question, but especially with the Rangers having have a few stopgaps in the rotation, I'm hoping he can right the ship. I think the complete game shutout thing, I don't feel like he threw 120 pitches in that game. I could be wrong, but it's not like hopefully he figures things out.
One thing he does have going for him is he has an outstanding beard, so he can always fall back on that.
The nice thing, too, if it were ever beneficial to us at all and we needed someone on the team to pretend like they were a homeless person... For whatever reason, and again, guys, please email us your questions on or your scenarios where this could be beneficial, but he's got the look. It's built in.
He's a 100% homeless person.
In fact, maybe he's like pitching for food. We don't know at this point.
Yeah.
Some nice charitable work by the organization. All right, on to the Rangers' next series. Again, get out the brooms, because it was another sweep against another sub-500 team. But you know what? You can only play the team on your schedule, Brett, all right? So I'm sick of hearing that as a complaint. Rangers swept the Phillies beginning of the week. Let's go to the first game. It was a Tuesday night game. Darvish dominated because he's awesome. 7 innings pitched, 9 Ks, only gave up 1 earned run. This was vintage Darvish, the one that really gets us going. Went up against former Ranger farmhand Jared Eichhoff, who was part of a small village that was traded for Cole Hamels. Brett, this is the Darvish that we know we have and that we get excited about. How awesome was it for you to see him finally come out, not have the command issues, just go right at hitters and just absolutely deal through this Phillies lineup?
It's really vintage Darvish, and really, I think, just rather unremarkable. It's just kind of Darvish doing what he's best at and doing what he's done for most of his career, and just dominating a team.
Kind of interesting, too, and this is a guy that it still just blows my mind, but Alex Claudio got another hold in this game. This is a guy that literally looks like if you and all your friends were out playing baseball and one of you was like, hey, I know we're all right-handed. Why don't you try to throw left-handed? Tops out at like 83 miles an hour, has a Bugs Bunny curveball, and he's got a 2.45 ERA on the season. How much fun is this guy to watch, and honestly, how does he get big league hitters out?
I have no idea. It's incredible.
Game two of the series, dominance continues. This was actually probably one of the most fun Rangers games of the year. So Andrew Kashner, a guy who has looked actually awesome since he's been healthy for the Rangers. Like, every time he comes out to start, I'm like, all right, this is the start. Kashner sucks. Hasn't happened yet. Yeah. He was dominant in this one. Went 7 innings pitched, only 2 earned runs. But highlight of the game for me, man, has to be Jared Hoying, called up because Carlos Gomez has the groin injury. Just decided, you know what, today I'm just not going to get out, and went 4-for-4 with a home run. Pretty cool to see him contribute, a guy who's been kind of a soldier in the minor leagues and a kind of a nice draft story for the Rangers. What did you think of Hoying's performance?
Yeah, I thought it was great. And to your point about Alex Claudio, where people just underestimate him because they're like, whatever, he's going to throw me like a 70-mile-per-hour pitch. I don't know if you noticed this, but Hoying, his stance, he just stands there like he's just hanging out, like talking to a friend with the bat, just kind of whatever.
He looks like he's hitting on a chick. Like, he's like, what's up?
How's it going? This is my bat. It's a Louisville Slugger.
Clack! And then he's, oh, wow, yeah. Okay, you were ready for that?
Just smashes it over the wall. I think that's why he's doing so well.
That's got to be it. I think it's always the coolest guy on the baseball field, a la Benny the Jet, is the guy who looks like he cares the least.
Oh, absolutely.
And still dominates everyone. That was the main highlights from that game. Sinsu Chiu, also atop the order, just came back from an injured back, went 3-for-4. This dude is just an OBP machine at the top of the order. I know the power may be gone. He can't turn on a fastball the way he used to. And obviously he's not a threat on the bases, but it's just awesome to have a guy like that at the top of the lineup who at least works pitchers over and at least once or twice a game is going to get on base somehow.
Yeah, that's a valuable asset to have for any team, really.
All right, so on to the last game of the series, again, part of the sweep. This was another getaway day. We had Martin Perez at home, which, as we've come to experience, is usually good Martin Perez. And guess what the Rangers did? Again, we came from behind with an 8-4 win. So this was Perez's best start of the year, 7 innings pitched, 2 earned runs. And Ryan Rua, a guy who, to be totally honest, has looked completely lost at the plate this year, lefties and righties. He had a big game, kind of his coming out party with a big 3-run bomb. Brett, we know home Martin Perez is usually a little more relaxed. He doesn't look like he's freaking out anytime he gets runners on base. So we've come to expect that, but it was pretty nice to see his best start of the year. And then, like we said, hopefully Rua snap out of a slump, because this is a guy with his position flexibility and his ability to mash lefties on a roster that is like 70% left-handed, especially in terms of the power we have. We really need this guy to get going. So what did you think on the two things we saw there and kind of projecting that going forward?
Yeah, it was great. I kind of forgot Rue existed there for a little bit, and so it was nice to see, like, oh, that guy still has baseball talent somewhere, apparently. Hopefully we'll see that more in the future. I don't know. But, yeah, it was good to see him kind of come out of his shell there.
The thing with him is, like, I've seen a lot of people on Twitter saying, well, why doesn't Rue get more at-bats? And I'm like, well, because he sucks right now, guys. Like, the guy's hitting under 200. He's not hitting lefties. The power hasn't been there. And to be totally honest, he looks really lost. Like, some guys will be hitting the ball hard right at fielders, or maybe just like having tough luck. I don't even know.
He's showing something that, hey, like, I'm still in this. I'm still in the game a little bit.
Exactly. He's been ahead of the breaking stuff and behind the fastball, and that's not a good place to be. So if you're Jeff Banister, I mean, I think it's pretty defensible why he hasn't got the at-bats. Trust me, he wants to play him. Like, the options against left-handed pitching really aren't a plenty. Yeah. All right, last series we're going to cover on this. The Rangers go to Detroit for a weekend series to, of course, hang out with Eminem. I think the team hotel was actually on 8 Mile. And then also play the Tigers. So we took 2 out of 3 here. The first was a 5-3 win that saw Nick Martinez get his actual first win of the year, which was a 5-innings pitch and just 1 earned run. Napoli and Gallo both homered. But the thing here to me, look, I know Gallo is... Did I say Galloway? Like, I think Joey Galloway showed up and hit a home run.
Yeah, we should sign him, maybe. I mean, it's worth it.
That would
be pretty good on ESPN for their college
football. I don't know, Brett.
Why can't he play baseball?
Brett, when was the last time that we signed a football player as a publicity stunt? Yeah, that's what I thought. Never done it. It's not what we do. Anyway, no. Napoli and Gallo both hit absolute bombs. Gallo's, I actually think, still hasn't landed. But this is kind of the tale of two tapes here. So Napoli and Gallo both still hitting under 200 at the time of this game. I believe Gallo was at 189 and Napoli around 186. But because of Gallo's ability to walk and when he does make contact, put the ball in the seats, his OPS is still in the mid-800s, whereas Napoli is in the 700s. And I'll be honest with you, I could see this going one of two ways. Gallo, I think, is going to have a role in this lineup when Adrian Beltre comes back. Napoli's role, I'm not sure. I know he had another hot game on Sunday, but this is a guy, again, who's on a one-year deal with the Rangers. Gallo's obviously a part of the future. And the strikeouts with Gallo are tolerable because he walks. What are your thoughts on Napoli, and when do we need to shoot him into the sun if we need to?
Yeah, I don't know. That's tough. He's still kind of struggling as far as average goes, but he's started to pick up a little bit with the home runs, which is really good to see. I don't know if there's a spot for him once Beltre comes back and you start kind of getting some more people in the lineup. He's batting, I think, 179 right now. He's been kind of inconsistent throughout his whole career. He'll have a pop-up, you know, great season here and there. But you're right. I don't know his age off the top of my head, but he's definitely getting up there. So I don't know how many of those, like, breakout great stretches and seasons are left in the gas tank for him.
Yeah, exactly. And as a guy who caught his whole career, like, I don't know if you've ever had to squat for like 30 seconds, but it takes it out of you. So to have to do it for about 6 or 7 years every day in the big leagues is a chore. And looking at his numbers again, I mean, Joey Gallo's on-base percentage is 54 points higher than Napoli's, and that's with averages that are fairly comparable in strikeout total. So if the guy's not also getting on base at the clip we're used to, it's tough to have him in the lineup. All right, second game of the series. This was a rough one, but it was fine because
it was a little rough.
We had a 10-game winning streak before, so suck it, rest of baseball. So the winning streak was snapped. Rangers fell 9-3 to the Tigers. Yeah. Griffin gave up back-to-back home runs in the first, and again got the loss. So we have to ask: he's given up 13 earned runs in 8 innings since his complete game shutout. And after the first start, it's fine to say, like, all right, we don't want to press the panic button. After this one, I don't know, I started to get a little bit worried. I know this is a Tigers lineup that was really hot, and everybody that he was facing was like J.D. Martinez, Miguel Cabrera, and Alex Avila, who somehow is hitting like 8,000. So, Brett, I guess what I'm going to ask, Tyson Ross is going on a rehab assignment in the next week and a half. When he comes back, if the rotation holds as is, whose spot do you give it to, and is picking on A.J. Griffin just kind of unfair at this point?
I don't think it's unfair because it's been two extremely poor showings since that. You know, he hasn't really shown anything since then to indicate that he's going to level out anywhere. Obviously, he deserves maybe more than just two chances at it, but it's been a really rough week or so for him. So I luckily in this game, I didn't start watching until the third or fourth inning, so I missed the back-to-back-to-back home runs. I obviously heard about them. It's probably better that I didn't see it because the TV would have been broken or some windows smashed.
It's also not good when you turn on a game 15 minutes late and you're like, oh, this is over. Thanks.
Yeah, exactly. You're just like, well, so I actually turned on a good spot. I believe it was the fourth inning, which is when we scored our first two runs. And so at that point, it was 7-0, I think. And then we scored the two, and it was like, okay, so maybe we'll battle back a little bit. Then we give up two in the bottom of the inning, and then it's just kind of like, you pretty much know how the rest of the game's going to go. I think we picked up another run there in one of the mid-innings, but pretty much knew that it was going to end up bad for us.
Yeah, I think the point on Griffin is a fair one. And again, the guy is a solid big league starter. Don't get me wrong. He's a fourth or fifth starter in a good rotation. But, you know, the track record there of injury and obviously durability concerns, you have to wonder if having him go out there in the hot San Diego heat and throw a complete game shutout. I mean, I think his next start will be more telling. I mean, because he hasn't honestly logged that many innings or pitches his last two starts, so he should be well rested his next time out. All right, series finale was Sunday Night Baseball, which is always cool because a national audience gets to see the Texas Rangers. We put our best foot forward. We had Yu Darvish on the mound. This was a game the Rangers won 5-2, but I'm going to be honest with you, Brett. The Darvish we saw early on, I don't know if the field mic was louder than it normally is. The grunts on his fastball sounded like two mules having sex, so he seemed to me like he was overthrowing. And his command was all over the place. In typical Darvish fashion, he settled down after two innings and was untouchable, but I was at the point in those first two innings where I was basically like, all right, I'm going to watch this game because I'm a sick person and watch pretty much every Rangers game I can. Henceforth, we're doing a podcast. But, man, times like that, I get the frustration. We're very spoiled to have him, and I love you, Darvish, and hope he never goes anywhere else. But for those one or two innings to start sometimes, it's like, dude, what is going on? It's one thing to get hit, but when he can't even find the strike zone, it's really frustrating.
Yeah, so full disclosure, I actually didn't get to watch last night's game. It's interesting to hear the recap like that. I read about the game, but it's interesting to hear you put it like that, because from what I read and just kind of following along, it seemed like he had a really good outing, and it was just basically a rinse and repeat of what he had before.
Don't get it wrong. I'm an obnoxious, spoiled fan who should be burnt at the stake for speaking ill of Yu Darvish ever, but I think when you see how good he is at his best, that's where the inconsistencies just kind of get a little more frustrating. But again, we can't expect the guy to throw, you know, seven innings, one earned run, nine Ks every single time out. And this was a really savvy Tigers lineup. Again, a lot of veteran hitters. One thing I think we should point out, Napoli went deep again, hit a ball to center field that almost killed a cameraman, which was pretty hilarious. And Pete Cosma, yeah, that's right, Pete freaking Cosma, goes deep for the first time since 2013 in over 601 at-bats, way before fidget spinners and Ken Bone were even a thing. So what do you think of Pete Cosma, who's basically hasn't homered since Nom, going deep in this game?
Yeah, so I use the score on my phone to get updates on any sports, and I got the update that Pete Cosma homered, and I thought for sure it had to be a mistake. There was no way. I didn't think that was possible.
Yeah, the casual Rangers fan would be like, okay, the score, why are you telling me that? He's not even on my team, because no one.
Yeah.
He's like a utility player, gets in once a week, as he should. Basically, if you're the pitcher who gives up a home run to Pete Cosma, what do you do at the end of the day? Like, your wife isn't going to look you in the eyes. How do you explain that to your kids?
No, you can't. You have to hide it from your kids as long as possible, and then just maybe when they're old enough to know baseball, it'll just be swept under the rug. That's the only thing you can hope for.
I think it would be easier to tell your kids that they were adopted than that you gave up a home run to Pete Cosma in a Major League Baseball game.
Oh, by far, yeah.
And another thing, if you haven't seen the highlight of it, you need to go back and look at it, because when Pete Cosma hits the ball, I don't know what the hell his reaction is. He puts his head down and assumes it's a flyout, as he should anytime Pete Cosma hits a baseball in the air. But I think Justin Upton goes back to the wall and he's even like, what the hell is happening right now?
Yeah, it might have been an Angels in the Outfield type situation where he just popped up to second base and an angel literally grabbed it and just carried it over the wall.
I could see even God like, okay, I can do miracles, but like, I can't do that.
I mean, yeah, this is going to be tough.
Yeah, we're dipping into like a second miracle favor here. All right, guys, well, that's it for our Rangers recap from the past week. Again, we're going to tinker with the format of this show. Please.
I did actually have one thing, just kind of a recap of what jumped out to me as a whole over the past three series or so, was really that, like, they didn't beat any teams that you would call a quality team. The Tigers are pretty decent, but the series before that with the Phillies and the A's, nothing crazy, but the way they won to me was impressive. Coming back, walk-off homers, the bullpen finally looking good. The starters, I believe, have, like, the third best ERA in the majors.
Yeah.
So they weren't that, and that's with kind of a thrown together rotation missing Cole Hamels. But the bullpen kind of started to figure it out, and the way they won was just really impressive to me. And they have a chance to gain even more ground. They don't have, I think Boston last night or yesterday is now above 500, but other than that, they don't play a team above 500 until the Astros come down on June 2nd.
Which will be great test to face a team in the division ahead of us. But yeah, to your point, I think we know firsthand from the start of the season how demoralizing It's one thing to lose games, but when you're blowing games late with opportunities to win instead of opportunities, that just makes you want to cancel your cable subscription altogether. So, the bullpen, somewhat stabilized, and even the rotation, like you said, not totally. I mean, Cole Hamels is a big piece to be missing, man. Like, it's one thing if we're talking injuries to Tyson Ross and Andrew Cash, and you're like, sure, they're, you know, legitimate big league starters, but we're talking Cole Hamels, a legit number one or two starter in the big leagues, not with the team. And, oh, yeah, I don't know if you remember a guy named Adrian Beltre who hasn't had an at-bat for this team yet, who will be coming back in about a week and a half. So
I'm still kind of doubtful about Hamels, and we talked about this before the season started. I think I sent you a text of, like, am I unreasonable to be terrified that Cole Hamels is just going to, like, fall off the cliff? And it's nothing against him, he's just getting kind of up there.
Yeah.
And you were like, I was literally just having a freak out over the exact same thing. So I believe in him. I think he's a great pitcher. And so I'm not saying he's going to struggle when he gets back. It's just something that I'm kind of concerned about, and I don't expect him to be the Cole Hamels of old necessarily.
Right. And, I mean, fortunately, obviously we only have Darvish through contract for the rest of this year, but with him fronting a rotation, have Cole Hamels as your number two puts a lot less pressure on him to be the perfectionist that we know he can tend to be.
Yeah, absolutely.
And part of it, too, I mean, the oblique injury from earlier this year, maybe he just wasn't missing bats. He wasn't striking people out at his normal rate. I'm hoping that maybe some of that was, maybe he had tweaked it earlier in the season. Again, I'm not a doctor anymore because the stupid Board of Regents revoked my medical license.
Yeah, thank God, finally.
Whatever. I mean, appeal's still pending. But maybe Cole Hamels had some early effects of that oblique injury before, and hopefully that was part of it. So that was our Rangers recap. A pretty fun week to be a Texas Rangers fan. Hopefully next week when we talk to you guys, just more W's up on the board. But before we let you go, and this is a segment that regardless of how we position the show going forward, I don't think is ever going to go anywhere, and that's Rangers Real Talk. Now, Brett, we've had a lot of fun today talking baseball, but what's more important than baseball? Baseball and fighting combined. Yes. So this past week was the one-year anniversary of the punch heard around the world when, of course, Rougned Odor became the adoptive father of Jose Bautista by socking him in the face. So let's talk awesome baseball fights we would love to see, and for the sake of parenting, let's just say no one gets hurt in any of these hypothetical fights. Now, I've already revealed my fight to you, what it's going to be, so the podcast listeners don't know yet, but I want to hear yours first. If you had to put together a team of, let's say, like, one, two, or even three Texas Rangers to get in a street brawl with another major league team and their two or three quote-unquote toughest guys, or the guys who you really just want to see have their face caved in, who would it be for the Rangers? Who would it be for the other team? Lay it on me.
So actually, I went a not completely different direction with this, but a little bit different. But I think it folds in perfectly to your theme of nobody getting hurt, because I would like to see fight literally anybody. I think it would, one, be hilarious, and two, no one would possibly get hurt, because there's a 0% chance that Bartolo Colon is actually going to hurt anybody. And no one's going to hurt Bartolo, because the second you get in a fight with them, it's just probably going to turn into laughter.
I think Bartolo Colon fighting to me is a lot like if you have like a dog and you run around with it for a little bit, and then it just lays down and it's sort of done.
Yeah.
With the whole...
I do think he could probably get one really good punch off. It's going to be so slow that literally anybody could dodge it. But if he connects with it, I think it could be an extremely violent punch, and then he's probably just going to lay down completely out of breath.
I mean, if Bartolo's smart, he needs to take the fight to the ground, you know, just because of his...
Oh, yeah.
And I don't care who he's fighting, ladies and gentlemen, he has the weight advantage, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So don't try and tell me
no question.
But if he's smart, he'll take you to the ground, it'll become more of a, like a grappling Greco-Roman wrestling. Basically, he would fight similar to Snorlax.
Yeah. Kind of. I mean, he pretty much, I think the character Snorlax was modeled after Bartolo Colon.
That's true. I've actually read that in a couple different places. It's accurate. Don't fact check that if you're at home, because it's right. Mine can't top that, because Bartolo Colon and that physique he's working with is pretty fun to think about in any type of a fighting scenario. But I would like to see the aforementioned Keone Kella, who... I don't think anyone would be surprised that he would be, like, gung-ho to get in a fight. I want to see him and Joey Gallo tag team together, just because Kella's crazy and is... I'm just going to say, maybe he's killed someone before. We don't know. And Joey Gallo is just a massive human being that... The looks that he's constantly giving people on the field, he's basically like, what did you say to me, gentlemen? And I want to see them fight Alex Bregman and pretty much any other Astro of his choice.
Sure.
And FYI to Alex Bregman that the fight will not be taking place on social media, where he's sort of proven he loves to just run his mouth.
You have to clarify that with him.
Which may decrease his interest in the fight to the point where he's like, oh, well, then I'm busy at that time. And then we say, well,
yeah,
Alex,
I got a thing.
Alex, we didn't say what time the fight was. It's like, got a thing. Booked.
It's all day, too, so you can't even really schedule around it.
So, again, those of you at home, the Rangers Real Talk, that's what it's going to be for the duration of this podcast. It's just real talk. And I got to, I did rip the fight concept off of another podcast that I listened to around the NBA. So I won't say their name because maybe they don't even want us talking about them, but.
Probably not. It's probably bad for their business that we would even mention them. So it's best to just keep them anonymous.
Absolutely. All right, guys, before we go, Brett, any last thoughts, anything that, really stuck in your mind about this past week or anything you're looking forward to this next week? We have a pretty fun series, obviously off day tonight. This is a Monday, May 22nd as we're recording this, but we go to Fenway Park, which is always cool. We'll get to see former Ranger Mitch Moreland, and kind of a fun memory I always have, Benji Molina once hit for the cycle at Fenway Park. So that's kind of a cool thing too. Hallowed ground there. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts on that upcoming series or just this past week that we had?
Yeah, I'm just excited about the next month. As I said, we play some not soft teams, but still teams that are hovering around 500 or below, so we can hopefully gain some ground on the Astros, and then we play the aforementioned Astros directly. So it's going to be a big test, but I'm interested to see the series at Toronto, too. I don't know if there's still any bad blood left from that from last year. We'll see. But I'm just excited to see how the team continues to develop. Hopefully Beltre will be back before long. We can see him getting it.
I can say in the Toronto series that even though Jose Bautista is hitting well below 200, he will probably have no problem running his mouth to anyone and everyone. And now that Sam Dyson looks like he's fixed, I'd love for him to come in and I'll accidentally maybe throw behind him once. Just to see.
Yeah, exactly. It's been proven in the past when he's going to bat flip down five runs that he'll just talk shit no matter what's going on.
He does not care about the score, but he cares about Jose Bautista. That's the main thing.
Exactly.
All right, for Brett, I'm Jeff. This has been the unofficial Texas Rangers podcast. Guys, before we let you go, be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes if you're not listening to us on there right now. Please leave us a review. We appreciate it. And again, we're doing this for the fans, as fans, so it obviously helps support us. Shoot us an email, therangerspodcast@gmail.com. Send us questions. We want to get those on every podcast if we can. Any type of suggestions on format, we'd love to hear it. And follow us on Twitter, @RangersPod. We'll get our ramblings up over there, and then we'll also have our link to iTunes, and we're on archive.org storing all of our old episodes. Until we catch you guys next time, go Rangers, and we'll see you guys out there on the internet.